So after I quoted that Gemara, Baal Peh precisely, and Shua got it wrong. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. All right, so let's look at our Makoro sheet here. We're starting a new sugya today. I really enjoyed the discussion of Po'al Ochel Mishal Baal Habayis. It's really a nice sugya with a lot of interesting chilukim. So let's get started here with the end of Perek. I think it's the end of Perek HaShoel, Kuf Aleph. The Gemara talks about this case of Yored Letoch Sadeh Shel Chavero U'Mashbicha. Ooh, Yakir, I was right. I did quote the Gemara correctly. Behemton Shel Tzadik and Ena Kadosh Baruch Hu Mevi Takal Al Yadan. Sure, you see that? That's what happens when you start your morning learning Chassidus. That's what happens. Yakir, shkayach. Good thing I edited that wiki text page. Okay, so the Gemara here in Bava Metzia says, the Yored is entitled to some sort of compensation. So who wants to give us a little background? Just tell us the story, what's going on here. Evan, you want to start us off?
Yeah, so the Gemara opens with a Mishnah about if I plant a tree in your field. Well, no, that's not what the Mishnah is. Let's go a little one step farther. The first case of the Gemara, which is a little more applicable, is the Nar Shatav no-till, right? So a storm blows my tree into someone else's field, and there's sort of a whole question about whether it's mine, it's his tree, what's the payment, what happens?
Yeah, so
And that.
the background is, you're right, it's classic property question. The tree that was in my field gets blown, or a storm picks it up, puts it down in your field, and now it's nurtured, it's growing from the produce of your field. Is there some split property now that it's like partially mine, partially yours? Is it entirely yours? But how do you divvy up the ownership, given that it was my tree, but now it's benefiting from your field? So the Gemara then moves away from that Mishnah discussion and talks about this Yored case. Evan, yeah, you want to tell us about it?
So generally, if you go into someone else's field and without permission and plant something there, we have two possibilities as to your sort of what you get paid for this thing you did. So number one is Rav, which is Yado HaTachtona, which is sort of a Baba Kama Mishane thing.
Yeah, hold on. So hold off on the exact issue of how to define Yad El Tachtona. And the other
Sure.
possibility is Shmuel, which is.
You're a Poel and you just get paid like a Poel would, sort of how much
Yes.
that thing would be worth.
Yes. How much is the service worth, right? Kama Adam wrote to Elikin Besada Zulanota. So before we get bogged down in the question of how much compensation, how much does the Yored get? Like, what do you think of the halacha just in and of itself? I mean, this is a really powerful principle, it looks like. So what's the Yored doing? Is he a trespasser? He's just walks into his neighbor field and he starts planting, and he's entitled to some remuneration for that? That idea, Evan? Yeah.
Yeah, presumably it's, at the end of the day, there was some action that got some product or some, benefit, and we're gonna trace back the money to whoever caused that, that benefit.
Okay, so let's approach this very cautiously. I think to the American mind, this halacha makes no sense, right? I mean, like the Balabatim in Englewood, like when they see this Gemara, they're like, "What's the Gemara talking about? The guy's a trespasser; he should be shot." And the Gemara is talking about compensation, like remunerating him. He's a trespasser, right? And the Gemara here has a different approach. The Gemara says, no. The Yored, even though he wasn't solicited, even though he wasn't contracted, even though the service wasn't requested, he's entitled to be remunerated at some measure. We have to figure out what that is for the service he provides. Right? So you can imagine You have a garden, somebody comes and just landscapes it for you. The halacha thinks that they're entitled to some sort of compensation. Presumably, you drive your car, you pull into a gas station, somebody comes and cleans your windshield. On the face of it, you're obligated to reimburse them at some measure, either for their costs or for the value of the service. We'll talk about that in a second. But there's an entitlement to compensation. It snows outside, your sidewalk needs shoveling, somebody comes and does it for you. The fact that they conferred the service entitles them to compensation from you. Is that right? Does that seem to be the general gist of the Gemara here? So I think what's so striking about the principle is that you don't need to be contracted for in order to have a claim right to compensation. But it seems to be there's something about the mere fact of conferring a benefit on somebody that generates the claim right, that generates the entitlement. And we'll look at, you know, the specific details of the sugya. How much? Is there a way to argue that you didn't benefit? Is there a way to reverse the benefit? But the principle on its face is just really, really striking and really fundamental. And one of the questions that I want to pursue is how broadly applied is this principle? Like, where else does it apply in all these cases in the Gemara? Is this everywhere in Shas? Is this a unique case? That's one of the questions I want to explore. The other crucial question is to figure out what's the precise basis for the entitlement to compensation. Like what exactly is the underlying mechayev here to pay? So right now we know there is a duty to pay, but we want to be able to characterize that more precisely. Zolt, you had a hand that went up and down?
I'd be like jumping the gun a bit, because it's not like a side issue, but something I really noticed much in the course really dealt with, because I guess like it could is applied more broadly. But is there a way to read like some of these Gemaras as like making a strong push about like the Eretz Yisrael, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael being like a large factor? Like it clearly is expanded beyond that. But definitely with some context. I mean, the immediate Gemara context is about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara ends with Yishuv Eretz Yisrael being like a context. And I kind of wonder how much like it, like this whole halacha emerges originally, like based on Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and like, maybe that explains why you should be able to be compensated for something, even though like you weren't hired. And then afterwards, it kind of gets expanded to a much larger legal theory that nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael.
It's an interesting point. My sense is that the is very limited. The Eretz Yisrael here only comes up in terms of reversibility. When can the Baal HaKarka say Tol Eitzcha B'Avanecha? And there the Gemara's one side that maybe you can't do it. Sorry, what the Gemara wants to know whether the Yorid can demand his improvement back. And the Gemara there has one side that maybe he can't if it's going to come at a cost to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So I think that's something. I don't think that's central to the underlying, that doesn't underlie the rule itself. It's a peripheral remark about one aspect of the reversibility question. But if we find evidence to the contrary, Zolti, definitely emphasize it for us.
I mean, definitely the more you want to limit it, the more that would be like a sensible solution.
Yeah, I just don't, right. The question is, does the sugya sustain that possibility? You know, if you wanted to limit the halacha, I would say one avenue you could go is to look at this halacha as a kind of implied shlichus zachem la'adam shelo b'fanav, rather than just the mere fact that I conferred a benefit entitles me to compensation. It's all just like an umdina that this is something I would have wanted to hire, like a contract that we're gonna impute to you, because we assume you wanted it. So you could get at this, maybe you could think that there's an implied contract here rather than viewing this as, no, the conferring of a benefit in and of itself creates an entitlement to compensation. So we should be on the lookout for that question. Okay, so let's look at the Gemara. So the Gemara again, so I think the Gemara on its face says that there's an entitlement to compensation. By the way, it's not just the planting case. What do we have here on Kuf Aleph? the second Itamar. Evan, you want to tell us about that one? Yeah.
So similar idea is if you go into someone else's cave and build a house or something. I don't know.
A churva is like an abandoned property.
All right. So you go onto someone's property and build a house. And then you below a shus and you say, I want my bricks and stones back. And we have a muckluk at whether or not we listen to him. Can the yore take it back?
Yeah. I think the standard reading here is that even if he can't take it back, he's entitled to be compensated for it. Right? I mean, the Gemara is not explicit about that. I think that's the pretty standard view. You could see here that Tosefta says, Hayored l'churvaso shel chaveru v'nashalo b'rshus, shaman lo v'yad lo tachtona, b'rshus shaman lo v'yad lo yona. So there's this question of reversibility, but the churva case is the same as the sadek case. You go, your friend's property is abandoned, somewhat dilapidated, you fix it up. You're entitled to be compensated for the construction. Okay. So even in the Gemara, you have these two important applications to building the churva and to the case of the sada. Okay. Now in the Gemara itself, we have these important distinctions. I'm just going to flag two of them. One of them is birshus and shelo birshus, right? You can see here the Gemara talks about Yored Besada Shelo Bershus. So it sounds like there's an important distinction between Bershus and Shelo Bershus. And you can see in the Tosefta that I just read, let's go back to the Tosefta, it talks about Bina Shelo Bershus over here and Bershus over here. So that's one important distinction. Did you do it with permission or without permission? We'll have to see what permission means because it can't just mean contracted for. And then we have in our Gemara a separate distinction between Asada Asuyalita and Asada She'eno Asuyalita. Is this the kind of field that's intended or omade to be improved or landscaped or not? So we have to look out for those issues. What's the distinction between Asuyalita and Asuyalita? The distinction between Bershus and Shelo Bershus. The other important distinction that we have in the Gemara comes up implicitly is this question of Eitzai Vavanai Ani Notel, but the reverse direction. Meaning what? Can the Baal HaKarka say Tol Eitzcha Vavanecha? This is the important discussion that comes up in the Rishonim. So the third important distinction here is when can the Baal HaKarka demand that the Yored reverse the improvement, which will exempt him from payment. I don't know if anybody saw the discussion in the Ramban yet, but that's a very important question in the Rishonim and Achronim. Okay, there's another distinction that we should be sensitive to in the Gemara here, and that's this question of Gilui Das. Was there some post-fact revelation or expression that the recipient like the service that the Yored bestowed upon him? So ex post facto, was there some sort of confirmation or assent to the benefit that was conferred? So we want to keep our eyes open to these distinctions that the Rishonim are going to emphasize. Okay. Any questions just on the basic Gemara here? We're going to look more closely at this story. Evan, why don't you walk us through the story quickly of Rav?
So just Rav Papa's distinction is whether it's sort of sadas ome la lita, and then moves into sort of a tale about Rav that's gonna help understand his view. So guy comes and says, zeal shoot, right? So who's Adas of the Kami de Rav? So someone, the field owner in one of these, in a Yored case, comes to Rav So Dio Shumle, so go evaluate it. Amarle Lobina, I don't
right, want... Rob says to him, go evaluate, I guess, the worth of the guy's labor, right? Go tell us right, how much it was worth, okay? Amarle.
So Amarle Lobina, I don't want it at all. So he responds like, he wants this thing out of his field.
So it's actually an interesting question there. What is Lobina? So what's the legal argument? Is the legal argument that I want the Yore to reverse it? And therefore, right, so I'm not going to pay anything? Or is the argument that I didn't want it and therefore I shouldn't have to pay at all?
Right.
So this, if this claim is valid, it shows that the Baal HaKarka has a counter argument to deny the improvement. Okay. Right. We'll see. We'll look
is
at that.
Is Dina in present or past tense? For like any Aramaic character, is Dina in present tense or past tense? I didn't want it, or I don't want it presently.
I think it's present tense. That's my sense. Lo be'ina. But I could double check for you. Or to quote, is there a Gershenson from the Chosen? It's like, what's this Aramaic grammar that you're studying? Like, how is it going to help our Gemara learning? No, that's supposedly one of the back and forths in the Chosen. But yeah, I think here it's present tense, right? Lobina, I don't want it. Okay, Amarle.
So Amarle, Zio Shumle, Viado Autochtona. So Rav sort of, I don't really understand what the transition here is, but Rav then says, go evaluate it for Viado Autochtona. And then he responds, "Lo be'ina, I still don't want it." So is that saying I don't want it even if I have to pay Yadol al Haktona, or he's just reiterating his first point, which is I just don't want this thing at all?
Yeah, the reason I really struggle with this back and forth here is Lo be'ina grounds for Yadol al Haktona, or is Lo be'ina grounds to say I don't have to pay anything? That's the machlokas we shown him here. What's this back and forth? So this is very important. And some suggest like maybe this, like Zil Shumle Yadol HaTachtona was like a Lifnei Mishur HaSadin suggestion. Like maybe Rav is conceding that you don't have to pay anything, but like pay him anyway Yadol HaTachtona. And then the guy's like, no, like Lo Be'ina, I don't even want to do that. Like, I'm not obligated to pay anything. So this is an important question to figure out what counter argument the Yoreid has, which we're going to pursue later. Okay, so Lesof Gon, Chazei Dekadra.
Right, so Lesof Chazei Dekadra. So at the end, it was seen that this guy was fencing around this tree.
Right?
Yeah. So Amarle Yodate Denichala Zioshumle Viadol Yona. So indeed it wasn't Lo Be'ina. And it was Yiloidas that he actually wanted this tree. In which case he has to now pay Yado Ahal Yona, whatever that means.
Okay, good. So what I want to look at today closely is these two questions. Question A is, what's the measure of compensation that's owed? And secondly, I want to ask, is there a distinction to be drawn between the Gemara's quintessential Yoreid case, where there's some material item that's placed in your Rishus, versus a service that's provided, a valuable service as opposed to like actually planting concrete goods in your backyard? Is there a distinction to be drawn between those cases? So let's start with the measure of compensation here. Zachariah, how many measures, how many different levels of compensation does the Gemara talk about here in your view?
At least just in terms of language, there seems to be, there's clearly two in the beginning. There's Yadol HaTachtona and there's Kam Adam Rotza. Those are clearly framed as distinct. Yeah. In the Rav story, it's a little complicated. It's unclear whether in the first move, he's merely clarifying what he meant or if he's modifying, as in Zil Shumle, some other measure, and Zil Shumle Yadol HaTachtona is a different thing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. But you clearly have Yadol HaTachtona there, and then also there's a gap, as in after he says low button email again, Rav does not respond. So does that imply maybe you could get away with not paying at all?
Right, but within the cases where you're chayav to pay, how many different?
Right, so you have the yad al tachtona onum kama dam rotze yad al aliona. Things.
Good. Let's work with those three for now, right? So
sure.
It seems like there could be three different measures of how much of measures of damages or measures of remuneration. One is yad al tachtona. The other one is yad al aliona. And the third one is arguably Shmuel's position, which is Omdin Kama Rotza Litain Beseda Zulinota. How much is the service worth? Now, it's not obvious that these are all different. Maybe Shmuel is a form of Yadu HaOliona. We'll have to figure that out. But let's try to piece out or flush out these different measures, different values. So how does Rashi define Yadu HaTachtona and Yadu HaOliona? You can see here, Rashi here, Kafal from Adala.
Right, so Yadu HaTachtona, Im HaShvach, Yeser Al-Hotza, Yishol Hotza, Im Al-Hotza, Yeser Al-Shvach, Eino Al-Shvach. So he defines it as the lesser of the profit and the expenses.
So explain what you mean by profit.
I'm not sure. There's a few possible different ways to, I don't know, the kind of the initial understanding is Shvach is just like the sheer increase in value that the entire, let's say, field tree system went up. As that initially an empty field is, you know, whatever, $100 with this sapling, now it's $110.
Yeah, so the increased value to the property.
Yeah.
Good. So we have two possibilities here. There's the costs. All right, let's take it the cost to the improver. I guess how much did the Natiya cost him? It's not clear in the Gemara if labor costs factor into this, but you know, just literally the expenditures or the costs of the Yored. That's one possibility. And there's the increased value to the property.
Yeah.
Now, Rashi seems to think that Yad al Hayona, Yad al Tachtona means, do we take the lesser or the greater of these two amounts? Yad al Tachtona means figure out these two amounts, pay him the lesser of them. Yad al Hayona means take these two amounts, pay the Yoreh the greater of them. So what do you make of that? What do you make of the fact that the compensation here is variable rather than fixed at like, oh, pay him his costs, or fixed at pay for the increased value in the property? Does that strike you as strange that the halacha here has this variable measure of damages, measure of compensation? Like, why should you go for the variable rather than some sort of fixed rule? Zolt?
It seems to me that like Rashi's view is kind of like importing, I guess Tosefta says it too, but it's like effectively importing like the case of Kol Mishana Yadol Tachtona, like the case of like the Uman who like messes up with like the dyes, and like instead of dyeing the dye blue like you're supposed to, he burned it or whatever, or he made it black or something. So like there the Gemara, the Mishnah says that like according to Remeir, I think that mean that the whichever is the smaller of the hostelt or the shevach. So it sounds like we're just like importing the same thing here, and like the same principle that Yorid is effective with someone who's Mishana.
Well, so I agree with you that there's other places in Shas where we apply a similar calculus, a similar function. I think, I don't know if that sheds light on the answer here. I don't agree that Rashi's importing that sugya any more than that sugya is importing this sugya. Meaning it's hard.
Well, that sugya is explicit about what tachtona refers to.
Yeah, but the Tosefta here is explicit also, right? You see, the Tosefta uses those formulations. Tachtona Tosefta mechasiyot im hashavach yaser alotza nosim esotza motza yaser al shavach nosim esashavach. You pointed that out, Zolt, right? So I don't think we should take a view about which one of these sugyas draws from the other. But even so, right? So like why in that sugya is the measure variable as opposed to fixed? So what do you think? Yeah, Kier, do you have thoughts on the measure of damages being variable rather than fixed? Since you're our math guy here, our PhD student in mathematics.
I think, well,
by the way, that comment, Noah, did you do that interview with Ari Wasserman about like secular colleges?
What do you mean interview?
Were you on Headlines?
No, I was not.
Okay.
But I listened to it, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll talk about that separately. I thought he interviewed somebody who like was studying. Who did he interview? Didn't he interview somebody who was like studying math?
Yeah.
But that wasn't you. Somebody else. All right. Fine. We'll have to talk about that separately. But yeah, Kier, go ahead.
I'm very curious about this now. I think Gabe was suggesting, so I'll defer to our expert economist, Gabe, you can correct me if I'm mischaracterizing this, but maybe that if it's really one of them, but there's a limitation. I mean, it's really Shavach, let's say, that he's owed, but there's some general limitation that anytime you do something Shalom Rishus, you can't make money off of it. We don't want to incentivize people to be trespassing.
Love it. Excellent. So Yakir says B'Shem Gabe, maybe we're not really dealing with a variable function here. What's really going on is that the compensation is fixed at either the Hutzos or the Shevach, but we never want somebody to profit off this kind of unsolicited conferring of a Hana for whatever reason. So we just cap it, right? We impose this artificial limitation on it. Is that the idea, Yakir?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah, that's great. What do you think of that? So I think Yakir's point is that there really is a fixed measure of compensation for the Yorid. We just don't want him to be able to make money off this. What do you guys think? Is that... I think that's a really interesting suggestion. Why does Gabe, what motivates Gabe to say this? Why is Gabe not like the variable measure of payment idea? We could write the book, you know, it's like, what's bothering Rashi? It's like, what was bothering Gabe? Gabe, does Gabe want to answer? Or? See, he's here on the phone, but. Yeah, Kier, what was motivating Gabe, if you can? Or Noah, you want to? Oh, here's Gabe.
I'm letting you Kier speak for me today. This is working out really nicely for me.
Gabe, let's hear from you. Let's hear from you, Gabe. What was bothering you in this?
I just tuned into the conversation because I was with my kids for a second, so I'm not following, so I'm going to let Kier continue, and then I'll jump in.
We want to know, Yakir was telling us about your suggestion that Ima Shevach Yasra Lautza Yadal Tachtona is not really a variable rule. It's not that if this is more, he gets this, if that's more, he gets that. Really, there's a fixed rule for compensation, just we don't want the Poel, we don't want the Yorid to profit from this unrequested service. So the Halacha just caps it.
No. I'm not sure I would have, if that's the question, I'm not sure I would have captured my idea exactly the way Yakir explained it. I think there are like two ways to evaluate the value of labor, right? One is Hutzah, one is Shevach. And the Shevach-based price favors the worker, right? The Shevach-based price is the worker sort of, assuming the Shevach is greater than Hutzah, which I assume it is in almost all cases, but...
It's interesting. I mean, it's not always true, right? I mean, it depends. I'm not sure if it's always true that the Shevach is greater than the Hotzos. it's not a rational investment, but I'm not sure if it's fair to say that the Shevach is always going to be greater. Let me flesh this out a little more. Noah, it looks like you had something you wanted to say though on this. Noah, do you agree with like the Yakir suggestion B'Shem gave?
I'm not sure. I was just going to point out that if we asked Gabe, it would ruin all the fun. Right. But I don't know. I'm thinking about it a little more. You know, I don't know. Sort of the initial intuition was that sort of the maybe, you know, in the case of Birshus versus Shelo Birshus, we like characterize the relationship of the parties a little bit differently.
Yeah, for sure. You could go in that way. But
I'm not sure it's as elegant as Gabe's mischaracterized idea.
So what I want to say maybe as an alternative to Yakir B'Shem Gabe is that maybe there are like really just two dinim going on here in the Sugya. One is what's the measure, how can we measure the service, right? What's like, kind of Gabe was saying, there are different ways to value the value of labor. But the second is like a separate consideration that given the different ways of measuring it, so it's like a separate din, there are two dinim here. The second din is that given that there are multiple ways of evaluating it, we give the poel the worst of those possibilities, right? Or we give him the best of those possibilities. So it's not that there's like a single root, there's like a rightful measure of compensation and we just want to cap it. But really like the halacha here is saying, given the plurality of methods for evaluating the service, we're going to give the poel the worst of those possibilities. So yadol tachtona then, or yadol yona, becomes a din in and of itself. Everybody see that? It's less about saying once we apply Yadol Tachtona, like this is the fact about how much the Poel's entitled to. Whereas like Noah was saying, like, oh, like in a Shalober Shus case, like the nature of the relationship is such that this is the rightful amount for him to get. Noah, I think that's what you were getting at, right? Like, given the nature of the relationship, this is like the ideal or like the right way to characterize the benefit that he conferred. Like, no. The halacha here is really just recognizing that lots of different ways to evaluate the service, lots of different ways to characterize the benefit. So we just have a second rule, maybe even a meta rule, that says, the poel gets the worst part, the worst end of the stick in a case of Shelo Birshus. But in other cases where it's Birshus, then it's like the presumption is with the poel, so he gets the best way to conceptualize his contribution. Okay, does anybody see those differences? So I think the question here is Yado ala tachtona or Yado ala ha'yona, is that a din in and of itself? Or is that just a way of getting at like the right, what's considered to be the correct measure of the worker's contribution? Anybody have questions on this before we, anybody have questions on that? Is that distinction clear enough? Evan, is that a partial hand or?
I don't know if it's relevant to these two possibilities, but just the fact that, like, just looking at the motivation of the Yori, like, he's at a 50-50 shot of losing money on this deal. When we say, like, artificial limitation because of lower shus, if the Shevach is worth more than the Otsah, he's cutting even. So, like, he's not, like, I understand that he's not making money, but he's not losing money, I guess. It's sort of like, so if we're going to try to make people, right, if we're trying to stop people from encroaching on other people's property, wouldn't we want them to be at some loss rather at just net zero?
Okay, I would hold off on that point because I'm not sure that we're looking to deter people. It's an interesting question whether like this rule is set out to deter people or to encourage people to do these kinds of things. I want to keep that possibility open here.
That's what I thought limitation was hinting at.
No, I'm not sure about that yet. So hold off on that interesting consideration.
I wonder if there's like a sort of like a different direction you could take it, which is like sort of mitzad the like the Baal bias normally would like, you know, I don't know, have some like set, you know, group of like laborers that he trusts and knows and whatever. And like instead this guy is coming and doing labor in a way that the Baal bias, you know, might not be familiar with. And sort of like maybe like a way of protecting the Baal bias that like, yeah, even though the halacha, you know, recognizes that he has to pay because he's benefiting in some way, we sort of want to hedge the, you know, whatever costs he's going to need to put out.
Yeah, that's already trying to figure out like the, like what's the, like what, what's the, what's this halacha trying to deter or incentivize right now?
I guess so. It's less of a deter. I don't know. I was just thinking about deter and incentivize on the side of the, you know, laborer, but this is sort of, you know, on the side of like a protection for the Baal right. bias.
I mean, is it fair to make the Baal bias pay top dollar when he's not getting his choice of workers?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, I think that if you're like doing like an economic analysis of this, and you kind of like want to. If you want to like impose some amount of theory on these rules, like no, what Noah's highlighting is like an appropriate way of at least interrogating it, because you could say that this is just like protectionist, like inefficient property rights. Like we want to protect the inviolability of your property. And so like, even if like that's on the guy's like getting you a profit and it's better for the world because you've like achieved some economic efficiencies, we want to prevent that from happening. That's like one side, that's the like anti-capitalist Jewish side. But then the other side is that like there's some externality that we're not considering here, which like Noah is highlighting, which is that hey, look, you think it looks like they're optimizing efficiency, but if people are doing this all the time because they think they can make a quick buck, and 90% of the time they're actually harming the Baal bias more than they're benefiting him, or they're preventing, you know, negotiated labor that would be more successful, more efficient, more something. So like, this is a way to remove that incentive, right? They're never going to turn a dollar. So it's not like, I don't think like in Evan's conception, like, I don't think it needs to be a proper deterrence. It's just like, take away any incentive to go about
doing it. Yeah, I wanna revisit this question a little later on. I do think it's interesting, like what this is like the deterrent incentive question. You know, and I think in some cases, like the Yored rule is actually a very good rule, right? So suppose like you want to make sure that all sidewalks are shoveled, right? So you know that homeowners are lazy and it's hard to get them to shovel. So you make a rule like anybody who shovels a sidewalk for somebody is entitled to sue for compensation from the homeowner, right? So you incentivize everyone to have everyone's going to be shoveling other people's sidewalks and making sure that they're compensated for it. If you want to make sure that houses are landscaped and have nice gardens, right? So you say anybody who's mashbiach and note besade chavero, they're going to be able to collect, right, something for it. So I want to talk about that a little separately. Let me just zero in on the measure of payment here. So for Rashi, it's definitely based on the Tosefta, you measure the value increase to the property, you measure the costs, and then you decide between those, yad al yona, yad al tachtona. And just the chakira I was raising is whether, is this a two-step, are there two dinim here, sheva, chutza, and then a second din of yad al yona and yad al rishona? Or is there really one din here, which is, as Noah was saying, figure out whether the appropriate compensation in the case is shevach or hotza, Yadol Yona Yadol Tachtonish Tehich Timtzi for determining whether this is a Shevach case or a Hutzah case. See, the contrasting view that I was suggesting in the Tzedina model is that what we're really trying to determine is whether it's Yadol Yona Yadol Tachtona. Shevach and Hutzah just being different ways for measuring the value of the service. We'll talk about that a little bit later. So this is all one way of assessing damages. This comes out of Rashi and Arsugya. To me, it sounds that Shmuel, just reading the words, is saying something different from Rashi. Anybody have thoughts on this? That Shmuel's shita is neither Shevach or Hutzah. It's Omdim Kama Adam Rotza Litein Besada Zulanota, which is how much would somebody pay for the landscaping service? That's really a distinct measure from Shevach versus, right, the higher or lesser of Shevach versus Hutzah. Are we in agreement then? So Shmuel at face value is really saying there's a different way to measure damages, and that's based off the value, how much somebody would pay for the service. So we have three options in the Gemara here. Now, somebody tell us about, let me just go down here for a second. Yeah. So somebody tell us about, and let me just mention Rashi here on Kuf Aleph, after Galus Adaitech de Michalecha, Vasisa Sada Hasuyalita, Viyadoha El Yona, Kishar Shasle Ha'ir Kimina Kamidina. This is a strange Rashi. What's Rashi saying here? That in the case where the Bala Sada, in the case of Rav, where the Bala Sada was go there, and that showed that he liked the thing. So the Gemara said, Yadol Yona, just going back to the Gemara, Zil Shimlev Yadol Yona. Here Rashi seems to drop the Shevach Hotzah analysis, and he seems to go with Shmuel, oh yeah, pay him like the going rate for planters in the city, which is the going rate for paying for this kind of service. So it's a little strange. Is Rashi here assuming that just the Yadol HaOyona is going to converge with Kishar, like the Yadol HaOyona between Shevach and Hotzah is going to converge with the going rate for Shasle Ha'ir? Or is Rashi assuming that in a case of Gilui Daita de Nichale, we drop the Shevach Hotzah analysis and we go with Shmuel's analysis, which is just a different form of Yadol HaOyona? Right, it's a third possibility, and for whatever reasons, it's characterized as giving the Poel a good deal. Anybody have thoughts on this Rashi? Whether he just thinks it's the same, or whether Rashi's acknowledging that there's a different din for Gilui Das that's just also called Yadol Yona? Does anybody see the problem?
Yeah, I think textually the point is like good, as in Yadol Yona does not immediately imply like Kishar Shosle Ha'ir. There's actually a little bit of a girsa point about what is this entire story about Rav doing. So like our Gemara has, it's coming to tell us about Rav's original idea.
Since I'm quoting the Chosen already, so it's Zachariah, tell me if you're changing the girsa on us. And
I mean, this is just like the Gilyon, it's not so radical.
If you had a problem with a pasuk in the Torah, you would change the girsa there also? Is that your father's method? No, I'm just sorry.
And continuing on, and therefore the story is actually being brought as a support for Rav Papa's contention that actually Rav and Shmuel actually totally agree, just depends on the circumstance, which is a pretty good read, as in considering that you see Rav is applying different standards based off how much the guy wants it. So yeah. If you read this as all support for Rav Papa's idea that, oh yeah, it depends on the circumstances, then, okay, granted, Rav used this odd phrase of upper hand, but really, he just means Shmuel standard.
Yeah.
So,
I think that's where he's getting exactly. This from.
Yeah, so which means that there are really three different measures here, right? Very, very clearly so. Right, Zacharia?
What do you mean that there are three different? I think it's interesting that Gemara's using the phrase Yadol Yona, but Rashi's convinced that it's trying to be fit into the Rav Papa framework, where, right, Yadol Yona just means exactly what Shmuel says.
Exactly, but it's not the Yadol Yona of Shvach and Hotzah.
Oh no, yeah, doesn't come up.
Exactly. I mean, so the point is that Rashi here is very explicit that there's the Yadol Yona of Shevach and Hotzah, there's Yadol HaTachtona for Shevach and Hotzah, and then there's Shasle Ha'ir, which is a different form of Yadol Yona.
Yeah, I mean, there's no case of Yadol Yona between Shachar Otzah in the Gemara now.
Right. Like, Rashi earlier had that as a calculation. You're saying Rashi himself never says that Yadol Yona is the greater of Shavach and Otzah?
Yeah, that's the Smuz invention.
Interesting. And the Tosefta has that. The Tosefta says...
It doesn't say how much Yadol Yona gets.
You're saying the Tosefta itself doesn't say that Yadol Yona is the higher of those two.
I mean, if you're Bereshus, I mean, is that like, I hired you L'chachila? Maybe, this could all just be saying a Chiddush in Poelim. There's just like more of a Metzias fact that we're not sure about, that like maybe Poelim actually always got paid in this sort of fashion, that you hired them, and if they were, you know, if their expense bill ran up too high, you know, that's going to be the limit. You're not going to, I'm not going to pay you for all your expenses. You're only going to pay what you profited me. But if your expenses are low, you know, as in, so like, maybe that actually is the typical deal of Yadol Yona.
Wait, wouldn't it be the other way around?
Yeah, I probably said it backwards. As in, yeah.
If his expenses were high, we would pay him the expenses and dock him the Shevach. If the Shevach is high, we pay him the Shevach, and it's out of his own pocket that he pays for the low expenses.
Right, exactly. But the point being is in, I don't know, at least I saw from like the SMA that like it seems to just be like this theory that like, oh yeah, of course all Poland, this is just how all Poland get paid. You're going between these two facts.
Right. Evan, what are you gonna say?
Yeah, my only issue with that reading and you were talking about this is that that would mean equating the low ba'ina with what was it? Makom Shirotzela Lita Zu. I don't remember the line of Rapapa by offhand, but it's you would have to equate the distinction of Rapapa with, you know, the places where this thing is fit to where this thing is not fit to this idea of Loba Enon. I don't necessarily see enough evidence to do that. Because I think those are two different questions. One is of Bershus below Bershus, and one is of sort of Ritzoy and not Ritzoy, like, or, right? One is sort of objective, like, okay, is this land suitable for this sort of planting? And the other one is, does the own Balasal Deh really care about this thing being here and want this thing to be here or ever?
Yeah, correct.
We explain that.
Correct. Bershus and Gilei Das.
Yeah. So that's just a little problem with that. And seeing those two things as different leads you down a rabbit hole saying that Rav Yadol Al Halyona could be something drastically different from Shmuel's opinion. And that can either be like a Matthias thing, like you were saying, or like, no, there's really, if you're a contract worker, you're getting paid some sort of set price and you luck out of having a variable paycheck. But if you're going to be a non-contract worker, right, whether that's right, something that's low versus, you're sort of taking the risk of being, you know, paid a variable amount. And whether that's Yadol Yona or Yadol Takona, they're both sort of worse than being a contract worker, which I think fits into sort of like a bigger scheme of like, this is sort of subcontract working and, you know, possibly not something we want.
Like this year, like to deter that kind of behavior, you're saying?
Yeah.
Hold up. Right. On the deterring question, what do you guys make of Zolti's Tosefta here that I just added to the source sheet? Zachariah and Noah, you were saying that this is a real problem, for, right? So here it's explicit that there is a metric of Shaman Lov Yadol Yona, Ketzad Yadol Yona, and Mashavach Esra Otzah, Nosim Lov Shavach, and Otzah Yisera L'Shavach, Nosim Lov Otzah. Here it is clear that there's symmetry between Yadol Tachtona and Yadol Yona, which would then force the point that Rashi's Kishar Shas Le'ir is like a different conception of Yadol Yona. So there's already two different dinim in Yadol Yona, right? There's like the Shmuel version, and then there's the Tosefta version.
Yeah, I wonder. It's like interesting that Rashi is sort of like clearly basing his, definition of Yadol HaTachtona off of you know, presumably this. And it's like weird then that Rashi defines Yadu Ha'Aliona as like the Sha'ar Shasli Ha'ir. I wonder, you know, sort of that's kind of pushed because of the Shmuel point. I wonder if, you know, if he think, or, and sort of what you were saying was maybe that's specifically in the case of Giloy Das, he's comfortable doing that. And that's where he sort of feels comfortable breaking from the Tosefta. But,
right, meaning that there could be different measures of Yad Al-Yonah for different cases.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah. This is pretty tricky stuff. Let me just get one more shita out here to so we could see all the different views. You can see the Baal Amor. Zilt, do you have a hand on this before we get to the Baal Amor, or you want to talk about the Baal Amor?
Yeah, one comment just quickly on Rashi. If we do read Rashi that he's like, he subsumes Yad Al-Yonah as kind of like a Shmuel-like view, effectively, you're paying based on employment. Does that mean that he effectively is also equating Sada Soyalita with Gelita Data de Michalach, that the two things are the same or at least equivalent?
Maybe it's possible. This is a big debate in the Rishonim, so I don't want to get mired in that question about the relationship between Gilei Das and Sada Soyalita yet.
Right, well, but doesn't the fact that Rashi is reading wouldn't this motivate that at least?
Yeah, he does seem to say that the Gilei Das turns it into a Sada Sialita, which you're saying that supports that he's going back to Shmuel. Is that the idea?
Yeah, then he seemingly is like conflating Yad Al-Yonah with Shmuel's view.
Yeah.
So it seems like he would in some ways at least equate Gilei Das with Sada Sialita.
Yeah, sounds that way from Rashi also, for sure. For sure. Let's look at the Baal Amor here on our Sugya. Anybody have a chance to prepare the Baal Amor and tell us what his main view is? How does he define Yad Al-Yonah, Yad Al-Tachtona? Very famous Baal Amor. Gabe, did you get a chance to look at it?
Yeah, it seems to be the way Akira and I understood it is that instead of thinking about Yad Al-Yonah or Tachtona as a question of Shevach versus Hotza, both Al-Yonah and Tachtona are within the world of Hotza, which is the question of how we evaluate Hotza. So the first option is that we evaluate Hotza sort of closer to the sort of the labor rate of the Baal HaBayis. Like it's the alternative is the Baal HaBayis as the work himself. And so the value of the work is significantly greater, or the Baal HaSada, sorry.
Why are you characterizing it in terms of Hotza? Hotza, as I understand it, is the worker's expenses.
I think of Hotza as the labor rate, as opposed to the benefit accrued to the Baal HaSada. Right, this is like how much, there are two ways to evaluate the price of something. One is based on the cost of production, right? So it costs Apple $200 to make an iPhone. The other is based on the price that the consumer is willing to pay, how much it's worth to them. That's $800. Right. So I think of a Hotza as closer to the cost-based pricing model.
It's interesting. Except here it's about how much would you, I thought it was about how much would you pay for the serve, like how much would you pay for, I see what you're saying, how much would you pay for production? Is that the idea?
Yeah, it's the labor rate. It's just a question of who's doing the labor, right? If, right.
But isn't there a distinction between the cost of the labor?
We'll take Shua for a second. Shua's cost of labor, like he probably bills his clients at like, as a first year associate with no experience, at like, what is it, $600 an hour? But my labor like rate is like probably minimum wage. So the question of like who does the work is significant in terms of how you evaluate the cost of labor.
Got it.
That's how I'm thinking about this.
So walk us through the Baal Amor, your game. So how is he defining? So what's Kimula Shebeschiros? Let's see.
Kimula Shebeschiros is how much the Baal HaBayis doesn't want to do this work, right? Shalos Tarech Ani L'Turach Ba Dehavadai Mahani Lahanam Ma'alia. Right. So
yeah.
If the alternative is the Baal HaBayis himself doing, Baal HaSada himself doing the work, then this work is significantly more valuable to the Baal HaBayis.
So one second. So the way I understood this, tell me if we're disagreeing, is that for the Baal Amor, Yadu Al-Yonah means how much would you pay a contractor to do the job? Right? Like if you were building a house and you had your pick of contractors, how much would you pay the guy for the service? Kimu'ula shebis chiros, ka'adam she'omer l'chaveru, b'neili karkaza, or n'teili sadezu. Meaning, how much would I normally pay to have somebody do the job for me? Isn't that what the Balmer is getting at?
My only disagreement with you is I would say it's what's the max that you're willing to pay?
But I would say it's like whatever you know you would normally pay to have a contractor build a house for you.
That's not how the Balmer is formulating it. He's formulating the alternative is shalas derech ani l'trachba.
Uh-huh.
If push comes to shove, like either you need to do the work or you need to pay somebody to do the work. Like how much is it really worth to you that you wouldn't have to do this work yourself?
Okay.
Do you think those things are different?
Yeah, I'm just wondering why you emphasize the last part more than the first part. Right. So kind of like Evan saying here, like you seem to be underselling the Balamor, and like you're saying that it's like, I guess like you're towards like the lower end. To me, the Balamor is opening Gedal Yona Kimu'ula Shebeschira sounds like, you know, on the higher side of the spectrum. Like
I think I'm on the higher side of the spectrum. I think like, right, for Shua, this is going to be $650 an hour.
Right.
Sorry, I never lost you.
Yeah, it looks like we scared him with talking about his compensation rates.
So let's just look at the alternative, and then I'd rather hear your more mainstream or the pshat understanding of the Balmor. But it appears Yadol HaTachtona is sort of the lowest level of labor rate. Mizazlin Hapalim Hakusim. So these lowly workers, like what is their labor rate? What is their cost of labor? I think of that as the spectrum.
So does that mean, how do you understand Kamasha Mizalzlan Apolin Hamchusim? Does that mean like a minimum wage kind of thing? Like
yeah, I would say that. Like the minimum that Polim are willing to accept for their labor in a market where the sort of employers are at an advantage and the employees are sort of have a weaker negotiating stance.
Yeah, great. So Eve is telling us, let's see, so the Balamor, he cuts out the Shevach and Hutzah discussion. So he's all like within, let's say, Shmuel's parameters, right? Shmuel's parameters being how much would you pay for the service, like on the labor market? And then he's saying, well, the labor market's going to have a spread, right? There's the higher end workers, what he calls Kimu'ula Shebeschiras. And then there's the Pachos Shebeschiras, right? I guess there's like high quality workers and low quality workers. Is that the idea, Gabe?
Yeah.
I guess there's like worker markets and employer markets, and you know whether you go towards the top of the spread or the bottom of the spread, that's going to be a function of yadol yona yadol tachtona. More or less, that's what the Balamor seems to be saying. Gabe, yes.
Yeah, but I thought you were going to disagree with me and give a much clearer reading of the Balamor.
No. I think that's definitely a good way to start. So he's totally. So he's out of the world of the Tosefta. That's not about Shevach. It's not about Hotzah. It's not about the cost of the materials. It's not about the increased value to the property. It's really just about the labor market. And he's saying Gedal Yona Yadol Tachtona has a spread. So I think there are two important things to consider here in the Balamor. Number one is, why does he move the conversation away from Shevach and Hotzah? That's question number one. Like, why is he uncomfortable with like the Rashi metric, the Hotzah Shevach metric? Question number two is, what does this tell us about Yadol HaYona and Yadol HaTachtona? Remember, we had this the Chakira with Inshitas Rashi, whether Yona and Tachtona is like a din in and of itself, or just a way of getting us at the, like, appointing us to whether Shevach is the appropriate measure or whether Hotzah is the appropriate measure. I think, what do you think you get from the Balamor on that question about Yadol Yona Yadol Tachtona? Zolt?
Well, I think definitely the strong wavering Balamor is that effectively you're being compensated as if you're like, you're effectively being compensated as if you actually were hired, you're a hired hand. And then the only distinction between Tachton and Aliona is just a question of like, how do we assess your wages? So are you assessed as an expensive worker or as a cheap worker? And effectively, Yadol Tachtona then, as or, like the modeling of Tachtona versus Aliona, is the same type of compensation model. It's just a question of like, where on the spectrum do we put you? How desirable are you?
Okay, so let me flesh that a little more. So you're saying, with respect to the first question, you're saying that the Balamor is conceiving of Yorade as like an implied contract? Is that the idea?
I think that's definitely the strong way of reading the Balamor. I don't know if you have to read it that way, but that's definitely like the model of conversation points in that direction.
Interesting. So I take it your point is that maybe the Balamor and Rashi disagree fundamentally on like what the nature of this halacha of Yorade is?
Yes, definitely could be, yeah.
For the Balamor, it's like, oh, an implied shlichus, it's an implied schiras poalim. And we just have to figure out, you know, how much were you willing to pay? And that'll be determined by, you know, sadasu yalita, nichala, how much do you like it? How much do you not like it?
And that's so kind of like we saw last year, a bunch of sugyas about like the worker gets hired out and like there's like a shliach and like they figure out what pricing and one guy said three, and one guy said four, and to get paid three, get paid four. So you saw a bunch of that like last year. So I think it's like a very big, very much in the bottom where it's like a Socrates of Poland sugya.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So you see, I think Yoni's pointing us to a very important distinction here. He's saying that for the Balamor, this seems to be almost like a subset of Schiras Poalim, right? We're assuming that you wanted to hire these guys. We just have to figure out what rate you're willing to pay for their services. And Yadol Ayona, Yadol Tachtona is going to help us plug in the unknown numbers for the rate. Whereas maybe for Rashi, this is not about Schiras Poalim at all. The compensation is about like actually paying for like it's like an unjust enrichment question that if you were enriched by somebody else's property, it's wrong for you to benefit from their labor, from their property freely. Is that the kind of the distinction you're drawing, Yoni? So it's like for Rashi, Sheva Chutza, something like that. It's like it's a property question. It's a unjust enrichment question. And we have to figure out how to write the improper benefit or how to make sure that you're not benefiting from somebody else's property, whatever. Whereas for the Balamor, it's just a question of implied schiras polim and figuring out the rates for the workers. Yes, Yoni?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I don't know if I would ascribe necessarily all like the motivations of like deterrence or whatever to Rashi necessarily. I think you could just say simpler, like Balamor, like the strong view of Balamor views this as an employment relationship. There effectively there is a Sokrat of Poland happening here. And I suppose Rashi thinks there isn't a serious Poland, and instead it's like a totally different sugi about how to compensate someone for doing something
to your benefit. Yeah. The other thing I would add to that is for me, I'm not sure if this inconsistent with your first point, but let's put aside Yoni's point for a second. To me, the Balamor is Yadol Tachton Yadol Aliona definitely points away from Yakir Bishem Gabe. That it's just a way of trying to get us at the right measure of compensation. I agree. If you accept Yoni's argument of what's going on here, it might be that in the Balamor. We're trying to like figure out how much was what's the right amount that the Bala Sadeh would have paid or ought to pay. But put aside Yoni's point, if you don't take that view, then I think the Balamor is saying like, look, there's always going to be a spread in how to assess the labor contribution. And we're just trying to figure out like the top of the spread or the bottom of the spread. So Yadol Ayona, Yadol Atachtona is almost like a procedural rule of who are we going to give the benefit of the doubt in this debate, in this disagreement, right? Whose side are we going to strengthen? If the Poel is like in a better position, we'll give him the higher amount. If the Bala Sad is in a better position, we'll give him the better amount. But it's not like we're trying to lock in on like the right measure of compensation. It's like rather it's just a rule for like which party is more in the right. So which party is going to have the benefit in the litigation? I agree, if you take Yoni's reading of the Balamor, that this is like an implied shlichus, an implied schiras polim, it's quite possible that if this is like a sada suyalita, then we're going to assume that you are willing to pay higher dollar, right? Because, you know, that's I guess made a more standard thing for somebody who wants his sada improved to pay. Whereas if it's a sada shema suyalita, like, maybe you would have been willing to pay like minimum wage for it. So then if you take Yoni's reading of the Balamor, that could rehabilitate the Yakir Bishem Gabe analysis of Yadol Yoni, Yadol Tachtona within this framework. Gabe, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, just to offer an alternative to Yoni's reading of the Balamor, I think you could read the contractual theory that there's an implied contract into Yadol Yona and not into Yadol Tachtona. That if we think it's Nichale, then we imagine that there's a contract and you pay him like a sort of a higher, more negotiated rate. And if it's not Nichale, and if we assume Baalbeis wouldn't have hired a worker for this work or to do this labor, then we sort of give him like the bare minimum that the worker would have accepted for this, as if there was no contract, just like sort of returning the investment that he put into it.
That's interesting. So you're saying that you're agreeing with Yoni Lechatzayin, right? You're saying maybe Yoni's right on the Nichale Yadol Yona part, but Yadol Tachtona is something different. My question then, Gabe, is so why should Pachas Shebeschiros be the metric for non-contractual improvement? Like, why not go then with Hotzaos Hapoel or something like that? Like the less, why should it be the minimum wage for workers?
In my mind, those are identical. I'm not sure I see the difference between the two.
Which are identical?
Like the hotzaos of the worker and the polin hapchusim labor rate.
Does anybody else think those are? See,
no, I agree with you, Itamar. I think generally hotzaos, I mean, maybe it still gets very different, which I guess what Gabe's arguing, but typically hotzaos refers to like expenditures by the poel, like the case of like kol mishana in Bava Kamma is one where like we're talking about like the cost of the dyes and the cost of the pot and the cost of the water or whatever it is, like all the expenditure costs. That's what we're talking about.
Right. I mean, I thought it's like
and not the labor cost costs. Plans.
No, labor cost is separate.
I don't fully. It's been a while since I learned those figures, but isn't the labor cost like part of it? Or so the idea is like, oh, we're paying something because he did the labor, but we're not paying him everything because the labor was skewed, right? Or the labor was lo mishana or lo nichale.
My sense of this figure is that it's literally the costs of the materials, not labor costs. So you see, Gabe's reading in the labor costs, like minimum wage, just as the labor costs, right, Gabe? That's interesting. Anybody have Zacharia, Yakir, Evan? Oh, Evan, you weighed in already. Do you guys have a stance on this about whether it includes the labor costs? No.
We did see like last year, wasn't it? Like the long sma and shach about like assessing it, like in terms of changes, and like there seemed to be some strand of thought that there was like labor costs associated.
Yeah, not in this sig yet, but.
No, in the Mishana case we talked about last year.
Yeah, that's true.
So there was like some, so Gabe's like not totally like wrong. It doesn't appear at all in the sugya.
Yeah, let's keep our eyes open for that. I wanna mention one other shita here. So what's going on here in the Sefer HaMekach of Rav Haigon? He talks about someone who's bone churva shel chavero. Balamor cites him. Who had a chance to look at the Rav Haigon? Nice little shita here. Zachary, you want to walk us through it?
I didn't get a chance to see it yet.
Okay, so you don't have to. I guess if you didn't, then Noah didn't. Is that true? Gabe and Yakir, or Evan, or Zolt? Any volunteers? Zolt, you want
to... Sure, I actually thought that... I mean, I wasn't totally sure what the Balamor quoted the Rav Haigon, but I think it's not actually the same thing. I thought that the Rav Haigon himself seemed to say that what it means is that you bring experts to come and evaluate, I guess, like the value of the work.
Yeah.
Like you're evaluating, like, it's not totally clear if it means evaluating how much the field has gone up or how much the value of the work is, but it's like it, that's what Schumer refers to.
Yeah, so Sir Haigon says, Misha bana binyanim bekarka she'inu shalo, kegon shebana churba shel chavero shelo midaito. Okay, so what do? He says, you bring, he says, the din hu al bal hachatzer sheyikach mimenu bedamav, the bal hachatzer has got to pay. He's got to pay for the improvements. The im bo shamayim al osa binyan, Misha Yodim Lashem, Ubikiembo, Vicholku Baosa Shuma, Zeomer Kach Vikach Hotzi, Vizeomer Kach Vikach Hotzi, Ainla Labal Churva Shayitin El Lapachla Shashamula. So here Rav Haigon talks about a disagreement amongst the experts about how much, he says, Kach Vikach Hotzi. Right, it sounds like disagreeing about the expenditures. Is that right? So I guess there's like there's disagreement amongst the experts how much it cost the improver to fix the property or how much the materials cost. Does that sound right? So he says if there's a spread in the costs, then you go for yada ala tachtona. So the strange thing is that the Baal Mor cites this. He says, "Matzasa Rabbeinu Haigon Shapir Shbesefer Makachu Memkar Yadol Tachtona B'Pachos Sheyashumo Osa B'Kiyim Shebeshuma V'Zed Doma L'Pirushenu V'Chein Pirish Yadol Yona B'Yeser Mashi Yashumo Shemam HaBekiyim." See, I guess the Baal Mor is, it could be the Baal Mor is just citing Rav Haigon for the idea of a spread. Right, so there's the, there are these parallel views, and that if there's a spread in the evaluation, do you cut from the top of the spread or from the bottom? But they're talking about different spreads, right? The Baal Mor is talking about the spread on the labor market, and the Rav Haigon seems to be talking about the spread, and just the experts differ on how much it costs the improver. Yeah, Kira, you had a hand on this?
Yeah, I think the Baal Mor is confusing. For reasons you're getting at now. I mean, as we read it in the beginning, it sounds like he's talking about something distinct from what's in terms of measuring it. But then he quotes Rav Haigon and he thinks it's Doma L'Pirushenu, which I guess is arguable what he means, like you said. And then he has this last line where he says, oh.
By the way, it is interesting. It is interesting that he used that phrase, Doma L'Pirushenu, right? Doma, you don't say like it's the same. Doma doesn't mean the same. Doma is something like, oh, it's like a similar idea, right? So I think but go ahead.
And then he has this last line where he says he's moda that if the hotza'ah zisera l'shevach, he doesn't take the whole hotza'ah. It sounds like he's assuming that before that last line, had you read him up till now, it's a strange line because he hasn't said anything about hotza'ah up till now, and makes me wonder whether he hasn't been talking about the hotza'ah the whole time.
Interesting. So well, confused. It could be, let's see. So
this last one I think is about Rashi.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, he rejects Rashi because he thinks Rashi leads to this problematic result. Why don't you walk us through his rejection of Rashi for a second? Yakir, do you want to tell us his objection to Rashi, or?
Yeah, but he says he objects to Rashi because he thinks that it's inconceivable that that a Yorid Shlobrish Shlobrish Bailim would get Shevach over and above the cost of Hotzah. He thinks that for some reason, the costs have to be what he gets will have to be capped at hotza'ah, because it's not so clear exactly what he's saying.
All right, so by the way, I want to make a diac here. This sounds like he's reading Yadol Yonah against Zechariah and Noah, no? It sounds like his argument is, if Yadol Tachtona is the lesser of Shavach and Hotzah, then Yadol HaElyonah has got to be the greater of Shavach and Hotzah, and like that Tosefta move. And he says, well, it's a logical absurdity to think that a Yored Shaloger Shus should ever walk away with more than his expenses, right? Like, why should he be able to profit off an unsolicited service? Isn't that his argument, Yakir?
That is his argument. Which again makes it sound like this whole time he's just been talking about Hotzah, because otherwise this is an argument against his own position also. If the labor rate is higher than the expenditures, then how is it then this would be the same argument against his own shita. How can someone just ever get more than the expenditures?
So I'm not sure if that's fair up here. I'm not sure if that's fair. Maybe it sounds like Noah wants to respond to that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is like a good raya for the question that we had earlier about what, you know, does Hotzah include labor rate? I don't know. Maybe the Balamar thinks that Hotzah includes labor rate.
Right. So let me, yes, but let me put that a little differently than Noah put it. Couldn't you say that he doesn't like the idea that I could impose an unsolicited improvement on somebody else and walk away with a marginal improvement value to the guy's property? Like, why should I be able to profit from that, right? But he's totally fine with the idea that if I spent $100 on plantlings, when I put them in your backyard, I could recover the $100, right? If it's just my cost, okay? What about the third option where my labor is worth $150 on the market and I'm just recovering the labor value, the market value of my labor? So couldn't he acknowledge that that's distinct from the cost of the plantlings? It's distinct from, it's obviously distinct from the marginal value of improvement to the karka shel chaveru. But he doesn't think that there's anything unjust about just recovering the market value of your labor. I mean, Noah's calling that a hotzah, right? Let's just, what if we don't call it a hotzah, but couldn't you think of it as like a fairer, it's still a fair form of compensation, right? It's like, it's not like there's some profit or some illicit profit that you're walking away with. Yakir, you don't like that.
No, I do. I'm fine with that. I think Noah's calling it a hotzah. And I think if that's what the Balamar is saying, I think he's calling it a hotzah too, which maybe is the answer. Maybe that clears up the confusion that the Balamar, like Noah, just wants to call that hotzah.
Exactly. Let's just look at this last line here and then we'll take the hand. So, Aval Bahai Vadai Modina. So, Yakir, read us now. So, what's he saying? So, he talks about Rav Haigon. And then he says, "Bahai vadai modina."
Yes, he says he's moda tarashi, that despite everything he said so far, which suggests that you should always pay labor rate slash hotzah, if the hotzah is greater than the shavach, we are going to sounds like artificially cap it at the shavach. Because he was the one who chose to be inefficient,
right? Right. And the question is, like, what's the deal with that, right? If Zolti's right that this is all about, like an implied schiras poalim, why should we cap it at the marginal value of the improvement when the improvement is less than the hotzos? So this is very interesting. I'm going to take the hands. I just want to, you could already see that these questions of the amount of compensation is going to take a stand on what the underlying basis for compensation is. There's the Zolti model that what we're dealing with here is an implied schiras poalim. It's like an implied labor contract, implied worker contract, right? That's one possibility. there's a model here that the halacha just requires you to pay for benefits, right? The halacha doesn't care about contracts. The halacha cares about you benefit, you pay. So you pay for received benefits. You don't pay for requested services. That's like a really interesting model of just like a property model. Like, what do you have to pay? Like, what are you paying for? You're paying for received benefits. Okay. There's a third possibility here that the halacha is like interested in unjust enrichment. A person shouldn't be enriched by his friend's labor. And then there are different ways of neutralizing the problem of unjust enrichment. One of them is to make sure that the beneficiary pays for what he received. A different model is to just make sure that the benefit conferrer is not at a loss for conferring the benefit. Does everybody see that? So you might say, oh, the moment the costs of the poel, or the moment the costs of the worker are covered, it's like a zen ena vizelo chaser situation. So there's no wrongful profiting off somebody else's chaser. So that's like an interesting in-between model, which would explain why sometimes you pay the benefit, sometimes you pay the cost, so long as there's no zenena vizeh chaser. So that could be remedied by either paying for the hana or remedied by paying for the chaser component. So I want us to keep in mind like these three questions. I think they're sometimes going to be related to the measure of compensation, but still distinct from it. Meaning, I think you could address like the measure of compensation question distinct from this like underlying issue, what's going on in the sugya question. But obviously there are some cases where they'll fully converge. So let's take the two hands and then we'll call it a day. So we got Yakir and then Zolti.
Sorry, oh, my old hand. I forgot to put it down.
Okay. Zolti and then Gabe.
Yeah, I was going to say according, I guess, to the second model where it's, I guess you're compensating based on like what you gained.
Yeah.
So I think you can have like a somewhat, I think might part of the discussion might be an interesting discussion when you're dealing with what a hotel means, whether hotel includes like labor costs and not just expenditures. It might come to matter how we view labor costs as like existing in the field, right? Before you had a field worth $100. Now I have a field $100, plus I have like the weight, like the value of like the bark of the tree, like the sapling itself, like that itself like has actual value that can be, you know, that's tangible. That's now on my ground, like rooted in my ground. So that's gonna be another $10. So I'm paying out the expenditure. And then the interesting question is becomes a question of like, does the labor cost, like planting the tree, planting the sapling, is that itself like found in the ground? Is that something that can be like spotted, so to speak, when evaluating your—
Like Locke's labor theory, labor mixing theory, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that like a lot, so I think part of the
discussion— You mix your labor into things, right? So it's like— Yeah, you can see the Achronim are all over this question when they talk about, could you, it's a very good point, Yoni. So are we just talking about the cost of things like the plantlings, or is the cost of labor mixed into the field also? Right, Yoni, that's like the, another way of putting it is like, what's the commodity that you're, like what's the property that you're paying for? Just like the plants that were put in there? Or like the plant plus the service is considered to be the commodity that you receive. Right, Yoni?
Well, I was trying to veer a little bit off the second one because I want to talk about like, if we're talking about like the products you've received, I think it's not just like what you've, like the commodity value. I think it's also a question of like, what, like how, like at night you went to sleep and your property was $100 and now you wake up and your property now is, you know, has more to it. So like, what is that, what is that more that now you're like paying for?
Yeah. I think in the Achronish language, you'll see Achronim talking about this notion of mamoni gabach, right? Like mamoni gabach is like, my money is in your rishus, so pay me for it, right? Like if some reason, like my car is now like in your rishus and you're using it, like you got to pay me for the car, right? So the Achronim want to know, is like labor considered to be mamoni gabach, right? Is that like something that's like, there's no difference between like the labor mixed into your field and the plantling mixed into your field. Is that your point, Yoni?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. That's definitely one of the issues that I wanna explore. I agree that my natia is to say that there's no fundamental distinction between labor and like plant lanes. Though you'll see the achronim are a little over that question.
Although you've been pushing hotzah as the traditional meaning, which assumes there is a difference, and that hotzah does not imply labor costs.
Right. So I agree there's differences in terms of costs. Meaning, so for example, on the Zen Mana Vizelo Chaser model, there's an argument to be made that somebody's made whole by covering their costs for the materials, not their labor costs. So whereas for the question of Mamoni Gabach, meaning what benefit did I confer on you, there you might think that the labor is considered to be like something that's, you know, mixed into your field now. But Zolti, you're saying, well, maybe there's no room to distinguish between those questions.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if you read like the Rashi, like we've had the whole discussion today, like what Rashi means when Tezo saw. So I'm not sure once you take a stance on it, I think if you assume that Rashi is following this model of conversation, right. I think it's hard to draw that line, play both sides.
Yeah, great. So that's something you want to be sensitive to in this, like, good point. Gabe?
Yeah, I don't have anything super important to add, but just in the raya or the semi-raya that Balamor is bringing from Rukai Gon, I thought that sort of the point he's making is in contrast to Rashi, who's interested in a shevach-based compensation model, right? The both options in Rukai Gon are based off of what we call hotzah. So if you scroll down for a second, Rukai Gon says, what are they evaluating? Kach v'kacholzi or kach v'kacholzi, but both of the options are within sort of how much investment the worker put into the labor, and none of them are about sort of what the value accrued to the Baal Bayis is, and I think that's kind of the point that Balamor is making.
So you think that relates? Yeah. I get it. So you're saying the vized dom el peirushenu is that looking to the market pricing is a way of gauging the labor hotzah of the poel.
That in either case, right, we're never interested in the shevach. We're never interested in sort of the other side of the equation, what hana the Baal Bayis received.
Right, you're saying in both cases we're interested in the hotzahs.
Yeah, and whatever, I disagree with you about the definition of the word hotzah, but I feel like either way we're thinking about the cost of the labor, of the effort, whether you call it right. Hotzah or not.
Right, but Gabe, I could have said that the Rav Haigon is talking about the cost of materials, no?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter in the fundamental question as to whether we're evaluating this work based off of the cost or based off of the benefit, we're in the cost model. And Rav Haigon is taking a stand in the cost-based model.
That's interesting. So you're saying the both Balamor and Rav Haigon are talking about costs, neither is interested in shevach.
In contrast to Rashi, which is who the Balamor is pushing back against, who thinks that shevach is a viable option for how we're going to reward or compensate the Balamor.
Right, and he's saying there's no basis for that.
In the case where it's shor b'rishos, I think that, I mean, I'm interested in your thoughts on bialus b'rishos and what the property rights that are being violated here are, but I think the Balamor is very clear that when we're talking about work done below b'rishos, we can never consider shevach as an option.
Right. Okay, excellent. Yeshar koach, everyone. So I want to talk about next time is, let's just summarize what we worked on today with the different measures of compensation. It's actually really good stuff here. I want to talk a little bit about the extension of this sugya to pu'ulos, like where there's no material, like plantling, there's no new like thing that's in the rishos of the nana. Like a pure service. You could say I have sources on that towards the end of the Marmakomos, related to our Chuvas Arashba that we saw earlier in the year. Just like a pure service, does that fall under the description of Yorei Desadeh Chaveiro? And then after that, let's get into this question of Rishus, Shiloh Rishus, Gilei Das, Asuya Lita and Inasuya Lita distinctions. Maybe also this Tol Eitzcha Vavanecha question also, the reversibility question, okay? So we'll wrap up tomorrow just with the measure of compensation, pu'ulos as opposed to things. And then we'll talk about these other aspects of the sugya. Great. Shkayach, everyone. Does 9 o'clock work for Thursday? Great. Excellent. See you all then. Take care. Shkayach.
Thank you.